Hey, Jen, I got a knock-knock joke for you.
Go ahead.
Knock-knock.
Who's there?
Why?
Why who?
Why do people buy? My amazing ebook is available right now, and even better, it's completely free. Figuring out why people buy is 1,000 times more powerful than knowing how to sell. And this ebook will give you the insight that will allow you to uncover the genuine buying motive of your customer every single time.
Plus, and this is no joke, you don't have to knock down any doors to buy it. It's free. And the link is in the show notes. We're not allowed to sell you or your business anything, and that we have to transfer the sale to the North Lake.
Oh, wow. It got
here's the deal. I'm standing here in person. We have 2 people starting tomorrow. I need these computers right now.
Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. Sure. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, and welcome to Sell or Die, America's preeminent sales and personal development podcast. I wrote the Little Red Book of Selling and Sales Manifesto.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute and author of the best-selling book, Sales in a New York Minute.
You're repeating yourself.
I know. I just love that title so much that I used it for multiple purposes.
You should just say, founder of Sales in New York Minute, my book, ditto.
So, I want to make sure people know the title so that they can buy it if they haven't gotten it yet. Come on.
This week's show features Jared Rubio, who we have to admit is a friend of ours. He was my Mac guy, my Mac go-to guy.
He's become a friend of ours through business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's a friend.
For sure.
We made a connection. He could fix anything in my Mac. He saved my Mac ass several times. And you gain respect for somebody that goes, no, you don't do it that way. And he goes, click, 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 done. I love that.
I love it.
He saved my data. He saved my butt.
I love
literally.
It.
Literally. So, Jared has a side hustle.
That's right.
And he quit his job. And now it's his main job.
I think he even got a new job, but his side hustle makes more than his main hustle.
Yeah, he got another job because he loves money. And he's going to turn the money into motorcycle parts.
I freaking love it.
Before we get into Jason, what's going on, Jenny?
Well, you've been doing these amazing hot seat calls as part of your 90-day sales accelerator group. We have a really great community of people that have joined that.
So wait, what's a hot seat call?
Okay.
A hot seat is when you get into your Tesla and you turn on the heater on your seat and it burns your butt.
I love when it burns my butt.
I thought it's when you invest in Tesla and the stock goes way down.
But I'm ching. Okay. A hot seat is basically you get one-on-one time with Jeffrey, but in a group setting. So you'll submit your question, and then you'll go on this Zoom where you can all see each other with the group. It's a group coaching call, and Jeffrey will talk through what's going on in your sales life and exactly how to help you. And so these calls have been so successful. They're such high demand. I mean, the feedback we are getting from these is unfreaking real that we have decided
to continue.
Yeah, the hot seat calls and the sales accelerator program. And so we'll put a link to the show in the show notes of exactly where you can sign up. The doors are not always open to get into this program, but because we're coming up on Q2, they are open right now, but it's like a very limited time cart open. So go join.
So, we have a 5-star review, I think. I'm not 100% positive, from some dude named Eddie.
Doug? Yeah, speaking of positive feedback, we're getting a lot of it from our listeners, and we just want to shout you out and appreciate you for it. Eddie writes, I subscribed a while ago and only listened to 5 minutes, but I decided to download a few more. Listening to your New Year's special with Martin Rooney and Gina Tremarco, completely different, yet so many good nuggets. in both episodes. Thank you so much for the great content. Well, thank you, Eddie, for the 5-star review. We love getting these reviews, love hearing your feedback, and it just makes us want to do this show every single day for you. And a reminder that if you want to leave your 5-star review, go to iTunes right now and do that, and we'll read it on the show.
That's right.
I wish these guys would give their last name.
Oh, no.
You know, like, I want Eddie to be Eddie and the Falcons, you know? I want Donald to be DuckTales.
There you go.
Oh, boy. All right. Now, let's get on to Jared Rubio. You guys are going to love his story. He talks about how he transitioned from his main hustle to his side hustle and how his side hustle is really just flourishing. It's unfreaking believable. And he shows how a leap of faith can make all the difference when it comes to doing what you love. So take a listen.
He's pragmatic. He's wonderful. He's Jersey, the great Jared Rubio.
To welcome our friend Jared Rubio.
And I knew him before you did. I just want you
what?
To know that.
That is true.
I knew Jared. Jared hated me way before he hated you.
Jared's never
you were
hated
my first,
me.
The first customer I ever hated.
It's hard to do.
What did you do, Jeffrey?
I get frustrated. He was fixing our computer, or my computer, and I realized that one of the cool parts is I realized right away that he was totally confident about what he was going to do and wanted me to just get the hell out of the way and let him finish. Is that fair to say?
I would agree with that. I think I remember the first time too, somebody said, whatever you do, don't touch his computer unless he says it's okay first.
Right.
secondly, it was prefaced with, just so you know, he's been kicked out of South Park Mall, so.
I was not kicked out of South Park Mall.
So
I banned them. I did.
Okay.
I did. I refused.
Wait, this is a true story. I went to buy 2 or 3 Macs because we had like all these new hires at the South Park Mall.
Okay.
And this is before we knew each other. And they go to ring me up. And I add our business account, and they're like, "We can't sell these to you." It's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, here's my card. We're ready. What are you talking about? And the guy is like, no, it says in our notes that you have told us we're not allowed to sell you or your business anything, and that we have to transfer the sale to the North Lake Mall.
Oh, wow.
Here's the deal. I'm standing here in person. We have 2 people starting tomorrow. I need these computers right now.
So I was really friendly with the manager that they used to have who opened up the store. Her name was Beth. Beth was really good. They would let me in the store early, do anything I wanted. And then she left, and they got a new manager who was a total jackass.
Uh-oh.
And wouldn't return my call, wouldn't.
Of course not.
Right. You're like, why should?
Who wants to hear that on the other end?
Exactly. So I said, I'm banning you.
Is that exactly how it went?
Yeah. I said, you put in your notes that no one from my company can buy anything from the South Park Mall because you're a bunch of jackasses and pompous asses, and I'm out.
So damn. Well, I didn't know that when I went to the computers.
I knew
communication error.
Yeah.
I knew all the people at North Lake, and they were always nice. They were always friendly. They were very competent. And it's actually shorter for me to drive from here to the North Lake Mall than it is to drive from here to the South Park Mall.
Of course.
So I'd say, hey, they're in my store now. And I went – I told the manager there. The manager is there. I don't want to mention their name to Aaron and Eugene. and I said, hey, you're in my store. The South Park Mall, I've banned them. They didn't ban me.
Well,
believe
now
me.
Maybe I got flipped a little bit.
We are treated like
I've
royalty.
Been banned other places, believe me, but not.
I definitely believe that.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah,
yes, it is true. Yeah. So now we are treated like royalty when we go into Apple and North Lake, which is really nice. It's really nice. We have so many friends there.
It's refreshing to have people that come in that you know it's going to be fun when you deal with them.
Yeah,
and that's what it's always been.
We try to keep it fun.
But I'm devoted to that product.
Yeah.
I'm loyal to 1984 Mac 00001. 128.
Was that the name of it?
That was the model.
No.
I'll show it to you. I got it right next door.
You got the actual model?
Yeah. The model number was 00001. It was the first Mac, the 128K. I have the whole suite of things, the original. It's not autographed, but
I'm surprised that they didn't let you in on one other secret about Jeffrey when you were fixing his Mac.
Yeah, what else is that?
which is that he usually at any given point in time has about 86 open Word files,
that,
and you're not allowed to close his Word.
Yep, I knew that after I saw the computer, and I said, I don't know if I said, what's wrong with you, or do you know how to use a computer, or what, but yeah. He's like, no, I leave these open, and I'm like, how can you even navigate through this?
Well, anyway.
I don't know. He still doesn't. I know, I'm sure.
He does, yes. Yeah. So you are a former genius. We've established that,
I think.
I'm not sure. And then you moved into the business.
It was called Business Pro, yeah, which is, you know, business-to-business selling for Apple, yeah.
I think really they just wanted Jared to work with us, so they moved in there.
Deal with these guys exclusively.
Yeah.
So, but here's the deal, and this is the reason Jared's on the show. He has what is known now euphemistically as a side hustle, which anyone else would consider their total life's work. It's their real business.
Yeah.
Like, not many people buy and sell trucks and motorcycles and motorcycle parts like Jared Rubio. And it's a full-time gig that he does full-time and then has another full-time job. So he's like full-time. He doesn't sleep. That's one of the cool
I just have an on switch. It doesn't have an on.
Let's talk about that. How did you get into buying and selling?
So it was probably just before I got my license where I got really into dirt bikes, and my dad was a car guy, had his first Porsche in 99, which I was probably 12 years old. So got me into all that. But really, when I turned 16, I started looking for cars. In Jersey, you can't get your license until you're 17.
Right.
So
I'm well aware.
Okay, yeah. We're all Jersey. Yeah,
see? All right, perfect. Yeah. So, you know, it came around that time when my dad was saying, hey, like, I want to start modifying my own car. And I'm a young kid, so I don't know any better. My dad was making some good money at the time. We had some cool stuff at my house. We had a car lift so we could work on cars in there. So he started modifying his car, and that led me to basically have the passion for cars. And, you know, I already had the passion for dirt bikes and motorcycles because I was a kid, but my dad would never let me have a street motorcycle because he didn't trust other people on the road. Not me. He knew I was capable, but not anybody else. On the dirt, you're not on, you know, open road, so it's different. So got into cars that way, got my first car, you know, just before I was 17, which was a very fast, high horsepower car. It was a Subaru WRX STI. It's a mouthful, but it was a really fast car. My dad helped me get it in the sense of getting a loan. My dad was always the type that you're going to work for it. You will not be given this ever.
Okay.
I never got an allowance or anything like that. But if I slaved in the yard and helped him with yard work for 10 hours, you know, maybe for a course of a summer, then I'd get a dirt bike at the end of the summer, something like that.
Cool.
So he helped me get a loan. I was making payments on it. You know, I was just turned 17 working at Circuit City.
Cool. Throwback
Circuit City. And it just skyrocketed from there. Started modifying my own car. Didn't know anything. Just did all the research on my own. Started taking things apart, replacing it. And that's kind of how I now can say 15 plus years later that that's who I am. My DNA is I like to know the insides of everything. I like to know how things work, what it looks like, taking them apart, putting them back together, all of that.
Can you take my Tesla apart?
Yeah, but it's only like three parts. So
okay, just curious.
It's a battery, seats, and some wheels. So that's easy. But, you know, all of that has indirectly led me to where I am now. And sometimes bad events can turn into something good. And that's how I actually got into my motorcycle business, through some unfortunate events when I was a kid. I actually got a DUI when I was 20 in 2009.
That's predictable.
Ooh.
Yep. I was going to pick up a girl. It was late at night. I actually was not drunk, but, you know, in North Carolina law, you know, you can't blow 0.01 and be underage. So I had a brand new motorcycle that I was actually hiding from my parents that I had in college because they didn't want me on the road. So I said, I'll buy it myself. I had some money saved. I'll make payments on it, blah, blah, blah. 2 weeks later.
Oh, this no. Happens.
Yeah. 2 weeks later. So I'm like, oh, shit, I'm going to be, you know, what am I going to do? I'm going to have to hire a lawyer. I'm going to have to do all this other stuff. I met a guy through a friend that says, hey, man, like, you know, I could take your bike apart and sell it in pieces for you. You could just pay it off quick. I said, you must be high because this is an $11,000 motorcycle with 200 miles on it. Why am I going to let you take this apart? I was like, no, I'll try to sell it. Sat on it for 6 months. Couldn't even lose $3,000 on it to sell it. So I got desperate and I said, you know what, man? I got no other options right now. I need to pay this off. Let's do it. Paid the bike off in 3 months. He gave me $4,000 the first week after we took it apart. We were just selling parts left and right.
Wow.
And I said, dude, like, what's going on here? I didn't even know, you know? We became really good friends after that. And 2 years later, we went into business together. I graduated from UNC Charlotte in 2010 and then went back to Jersey for a year because I didn't really have anything, you know, I didn't know what to do. I was like, my family's there. I'll just go.
No, you missed jug handles. That was what it was.
Oh, man.
Oh,
I missed the weather and I missed the people down here. So I moved back in 2011 where we actually opened a shop, me and my business partner at the time. But we were doing basically – I was the finance guy. So I was throwing money at bikes and he was doing all the work and we were splitting the profits. I don't know in whose book who would do that because I was doing basically nothing. And then once we actually got a shop together, immediate knocking of heads. So we lasted about 6 months together. He had his pregnant girlfriend working for us and all this kind of stuff. And we were best friends. So that was that lesson right there. Don't do business with friends.
Yeah.
it took actually a few years for us to get on the same page. Now we're really close again, which is great. I love the guy to death. But we actually had a shop over by North Lake Mall. And
did he marry the pregnant girlfriend? Come on.
I marry him?
No, did he?
He's got three kids with her now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah. Very so nice. His oldest is about seven. So
wow.
He's pregnant with the first one. That long ago. So,
got it.
So that was a learning experience in itself. I actually, this is leading up to how I got to Apple, left that, we separated, and I didn't work for a year. I did nothing for a year. I basically slept in every day. I, you know, was tinkering with phones a little bit on the side. So
grew a beard.
No, not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. So that was the era of iPhone 4s.
Oh.
So, you know, people were cracking the screens and stuff like that. And I found the supplier to customize the phone. So if you crack a screen, you want to make your phone gold, blue, red, orange, purple, whatever, I'll take the whole phone apart, replace the screen, make it a different color. That was huge.
Wow.
So I made some side money. I made about $10,000 in profit over a course of maybe 2 years. So a little bit of side money.
Yeah.
But really, while I was not working at all, and it came to a point where every single person would contact me for Apple help. And say, hey, could you fix my stuff or like give me suggestions or whatever? And everyone just said, why don't you just work for Apple? So this is going into 2013. And I said, yeah, might as well. I don't have a job, right? Like, let's give it a go. I had a college degree, a bunch of knowledge, and didn't know what I wanted to do. So
perfect for them.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Exactly.
I mean, you fit the mold.
I still had the motorcycle thing going, but I was doing it by myself now out of my garage at home, which was very, very slow. I was buying one motorcycle. Taking it apart, selling in pieces, waited till I made all that money back to buy the next motorcycle.
Oh, wow.
Because when capital's low, what are you going to do? I can't buy that much. So that wasn't making me that much money at all. So I actually got the job at Apple. I started actually January 23rd, 2013 was day one at Apple.
He knows cool. the date. I love
it. Of course,
it.
Start date. And now, you know, it's 6 years later, but in that time, I've grown my business from $5,000 in revenue maybe for a year to $50,000 to $75,000 now, where I do $250,000 a year
as in side hustle
as a part-time job from my house while working 40 hours a week. So
I love it, and I plan obviously
that's a number to easily grow, but I'm doing it from home where I have a good and bad problem. My good problem is I'm out of room to expand my business. The bad problem is I'm out of room to expand my business.
Yeah.
So I've been looking for shop space and all that kind of stuff because I know what I'm capable of, and I could double the business. I could do $500,000 in sales next year with the right amount of space. So
what's stopping you from doing that?
It's that leap of faith that where it's a risk with the cost that it takes.
Yeah, and you incur overhead.
Now I'm going extra overhead that I've never had before.
Yeah.
Also, the whole thing about taking that leap to leave Apple and really try to say, you know what, now's my time. Like, I'm complacent. This isn't who I am. I'm a hustler by nature. I'm sitting here twiddling my thumbs at a computer screen. It doesn't fit my personality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm 30 years old now. If you would ask me when I was 20, I wouldn't
He's
have known.
He's so old now.
Yeah, I know.
I feel old.
Yeah.
I know you're old.
I was looking today at my 30-year-old underwear.
It doesn't have any holes in it? That's weird.
Oh, man.
But, you know, so that's where, you know, where I've come to really find who I am now and know what I want out of life and out of a job. Let alone out of my hustle, you know, my hustle mind spirit.
Is it weird to work at a company where you're not making, I don't know, maybe even half as much as you're making in your own business? And how do you interact with people that are judging you in that way? You know, like, he doesn't need this.
Right. And that's kind of been over the years, people kind of figured that out about me. And I've always said I worked for less than what I'm worth for this entire period. Apple's a great company to work for and all that, but you know, with the structure, it's a retail environment. You know, there's only so high you can go.
Right.
And you know, if you go to a separate company, maybe a finance company, and do their IT desk support, whatever it is, yeah, you'll make more money. But is it fulfilling? Apple brings a kind of different. A different scenario to the retail.
Yeah, right,
for sure.
So they'll always say, you know, this is a different kind of retail, which, you know, was great for me for a while. And I love interacting with people and all that. But it comes to the point where it kind of hinders your growth because I know where I want to go. And in the retail environment, that wasn't for me.
Yeah.
So I focused on my business. So as time went on, I did more and more of my business and pulled back my energy from Apple and stuff. But I'm still putting in 40 hours a week there. And then some weeks of my business, you know, 20 to 40 hours, depending on what I have going on. Some weeks could be 10 hours.
Wow.
But in general, once things are rolling, you know, then it'll shipping orders and stuff. You know,
oh, yeah. So. So I would call to get my – before they had joint venture, and I would call the store, and I would go, I need to come in. Da, 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 da. Okay, well, make an appointment. No, I want that Ruby. Okay.
That's what I want out of my business. I want people to say – I'm going to him because he's straight up, got good pricing, yep. His quality, all the things that you want to be in business, which is what I strive to be because I'm a one-person operation.
Mm-hmm.
So let me give you one Circuit City story.
Ooh.
I was in Cincinnati, Ohio, staying at the Hyatt Hotel, and right across the street is the mall. And in the mall, they had a Circuit City, and I needed something that was about $120. Sunday, 11:45. I go to the mall. I see it's open. There's a guy there. I say, hey, I need one of these. Sorry, we're closed. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, we don't open until 12 o'clock. And I had to be back at 12 o'clock. I said, well, I just want this. I said, can I talk to the manager? He said, I am the manager. Okay. Right. I said, well, I'll tell you what. I'll give you the cash. You can handwrite me any receipt. I don't care about the receipt. Put it right next to the cash register. And at 12:01, you can put the money in the register. How about that? Wouldn't do it.
Not thinking outside the box.
And now they are still closed. And yes, forever.
2008, they went under. Yep. Yeah. I worked for them right that winter before they went out. I said, watch, mark my words, you guys are going to go out of business with just how everybody did business.
Mm-hmm. So you know the song was 20 years ago today, Sergeant Pepper taught the band to play.
Sing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was 20 years ago. Okay.
That's it.
It was a little more than 20 years ago today that I got my driver's license.
Oh, wow.
In New Jersey.
In a little more than 20 years
I was
ago?
Trying to do the math on that, carry the two out of three, but.
Okay. It was a little more than 50 years ago
there
today.
Yeah.
But not 60.
Yeah.
So like 55 years ago. It was snowing. I had to put chains on my car to take the test.
Nice.
My calendar had already been X'd off for like 6 months. I was the last kid in high school to get his driver's license in my class because I was the youngest.
I'm the same way. I was a summer birthday, so.
I was February birthday in class. So it was like everyone drove the whole year except me.
Yep.
And I was determined, man. And I took the test in the snow in
and
chain.
And you passed?
Passed.
I love it.
Nailed it.
Well, I almost didn't pass because I was driving with one arm out the window.
Oh, because you're cool.
Because you're trying to be cool.
I'd never been driving for like 2 years.
Oh, my God. Okay. So what would you tell someone who's hesitant to take that leap of faith to really dive into their side hustle?
Oh, I love it. So I would say once you feel the freedom and the opportunity, like there's no person going to push you or listen to any motivational speaker that's going to tell you everything you want to hear to say, okay, I'm going to wake up tomorrow. I'm going to quit my job or I'm going to start this business.
Right.
What I tell everybody is be thought out of what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Don't say, oh, I see this person making a ton of money in this business. I'm going to do that. Okay. Where are you going to start? Where's the capital?
Right.
What are you doing for money outside of that? For me, it's all about security. So get a full-time job that allows you to spend time after work to put in for your own business. Don't expect to work 40 hours a week and to make a serious killing.
Because
anybody that I know that kills it did not start just making 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
So I would tell somebody to be thought out about it because for me, it wasn't like I'm starting this tomorrow. I kind of fell into it. But then I came to realize all the things that you need, the pieces of the puzzle.
Right.
And if you don't have that drive and that motivation, 40 hours a week can make most people tired. But for me, I'm kind of in the mindset that if I only work 4 hours a week, I'm missing something. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like I've done enough in my week.
Hello, everybody. This is Jake Stenziano, host of Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, Mr. Gino Barbaro.
The Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast catalogs our journey to becoming financially free through multifamily real estate investing.
Gang, each week we interview a guest specifically chosen for their expertise in and around multifamily real estate.
We talk you through our entire process, every victory and every misstep and everything that we've learned along the way.
What does that look like? Buy right, manage right, and finance right.
The audio podcast is available wherever fine podcasts are found.
Or check us out on our YouTube page where you'll find tons of other great content.
There's something you're leaving out, though. There's something he's leaving out.
Okay.
He loves it.
Yeah.
I like being my own boss.
You can feel the passion. Yeah. I hope you can hear it through the mic. You can totally feel the passion of you talking about it. So how many hours approximately do you work on your side thing?
I don't – you know, I never equate it, but I do it by the motorcycle. So with my business, I buy – last year I bought about 20 motorcycles. So when I equate to the process of buying the bike, doing the research to find it, buy it, bring it home, take it apart, clean the parts, take the pictures, make the eBay listings, and ship all the parts, all said and done, each motorcycle can range from 30 to 50 hours of work.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, you know, and what, 50 hours times 20, you know, like 1,000 hours in a year, maybe. But, you know, it's so up and down that I just equate it to my system.
Do you take apart Harley Davidsons?
That's one. I do not do American motorcycles, and there's a reason for that.
Which is?
So Harley Davidsons are a very saturated market where Harley Davidson made one – the Sportster, for example, one model. They made the same bike for over 20 years. The parts didn't change. So when I, Joe Smith over here, want to customize my bike and then I have all these factory parts laying around, so does a million other people.
Right.
And they're trying to sell them, and somebody's selling something for $20 and that same part for $100. So who do you buy from? Somebody doesn't care. They'll just sell for cheap. So – my market is a very small – I like to call myself a boutique motorcycle parts dealer because I only sell newer stuff and Japanese bikes mainly, but it's a very small range of years. So Honda, Yamaha, Suzuki, Kawasaki, Ducati, and BMW are basically the only brands I mess with, but then only specific models in that group. So it's very small regardless, but I cater to people that – are, you know, motorcycle racers, people that are just everyday riders that might crash their bike and need to replace their parts, and I'm 50% or more less than a dealer.
Wow.
Or there's people that I've catered to race teams that put motorcycle engines in race cars. So it's really cool. I've had some opportunity to work with some crazy people that put these motorcycle engines in race cars all over the world because I ship worldwide.
Wow.
So it's pretty crazy. There's like off-road race cars, there's Formula One looking cars, there's dirt track cars. There's so many endless applications for it that can really be beneficial if you know what you're doing. And part of that is being an expert in logistics, because somebody says, how do you ship an engine to China? Well, it's not that straightforward. You
put it in a fucking box, don't you?
Nope.
Oh.
Nope. There's
you have to crate it. Don't you have to crate it?
Crate it, yep. And it's got to go freight, and it's, you know, the freight class. There's all this stuff, logistics. Yeah. It has to be drained properly and all that kind of stuff. But what's cool about that is I came across somebody who contacted me about – he was building a fully custom car from the ground up. He was a young kid. And I said, what are you going to be doing with this thing? He said, well, in 2008, and I got in a really bad car accident. I'm actually paraplegic. I'm paralyzed from the waist down. And he's like 22 years old, this kid. And he said, I used to love riding my motorcycle and I can't ride it anymore. So me and my friends, a group of engineers, are building a car from the ground up so that it was like a three-wheel car that was going to be basically open wheel. So it felt like a motorcycle, but he could sit in it and have full hand controls to drive it. And he wanted a motorcycle engine. So I ended up helping the guy out. And they're still probably building it, I'm sure. This was this past summer. But it was really cool to get to say, like, I don't get that interaction kind of with people. It's just pretty transactional, you know, how much you can give me this part for, this or that. Yeah. So we got, you know, into the story part of it. And, you know, we had multiple conversations for hours on end about just everything. And I just felt responsible to say, I'm going to be the guy that supplies this engine and it's going to be quality. You know, I know I'm being straight with the guy and everything's going to work out great for him. Cause he's a little skeptical, you know, I've never really bought from eBay before. And this is, you know, it was like $4,000 for the engine kit he needed. So all said and done, I gave him a discount, helped him out and all that kind of stuff just to be, you know, kind of be personable with the guy about it, you know? And I take that story with me because it's pretty cool to say, like, I'm part of somebody's journey to get back into a passion.
Yeah. Right?
Like something they can never physically be able to do again, but can get some enjoyment out of something that they'll be able to do with their friends.
Okay, so I'm going to throw something at you, diehards, because you think you have what is known as a side hustle. It is not a side hustle. It's a fucking hustle. Because if you're not hustling,
I like it.
There's nothing side about it. You either hustle or you don't. And
yes.
I know Jared well enough to know he hustles in when he's working for 40 hours a week and when he's home. Mm-hmm. He puts his heart into his work. Now, the second part to this. Listening to Jared, you understand one thing. He knows his business and he has the self-confidence to know that it's going to work. He figured out the market. He niched himself in that marketplace to a point where he knew the customers would be limited, but they would be consistent. And he put himself in a position where he loved what he did and put his heart into it. Your heart is in your business. You could hear it in your – and as a result of it, surprise, surprise, it's successful. And that's literally one of the reasons that we're grateful to have you on the show, because there are a lot of kids out there and they're out there looking to be able to do business for themselves.
Not just kids. Well, people of all ages.
That's true. Well, I consider anybody under 70 a kid, so I'm probably...
Hey there, old sport.
Hey there, 6-year-old. Jeffrey just called you a kid.
Exactly. And I actually refer to myself as a kid. You know the Woody Allen line, you're only young once, but you can always be immature?
I don't know that one, but it sounds perfect.
You
sound like my dad, because my dad's 62 and says he's a kid too.
Exactly.
So it makes perfect sense.
But you can be inspirational. I think you should consider giving a talk or two to either millennials or to the next generation of people that are growing up, because I think they could learn a lot from you.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I thought about that. Like I said something about doing like eBay seminars,
yes.
You know, where you could teach people how to sell professionally from home.
Yes.
Because everything that I do, people think is professional and they think I have a shop and all that stuff. And I'm running this operation from a 2-car garage and using my 2 spare bedrooms as an office and an extra parts room.
They're pretty popular. My mom took one of those eBay courses.
And, thinking about that, like, I feel like sometimes I don't have enough to say to people, because I'm like,
oh, yes,
well,
you do.
Where's my millions of dollars to back me up? No, but I know the mentality and what it takes. So, you know, I was telling you a little bit about, you know, I follow Gary Vaynerchuk heavily because I just align with his personality more than anything than he says that's motivational,
mm-hmm.
because he gives it to people straight, man. It's articulated in a way that clicks with the millennials, but also clicks with the older generation. Mm-hmm. So it's for everybody. And some people say, he's not really for me, but everybody I've turned on to him loves the guy. And I've never really been one, I don't listen to motivational people and stuff like that. But it doesn't sound that way when I listen to him. And over the last 2 years, I would say, I take bits of information into my personality consideration and saying, like, I'm going to help other people hustle for free. Because if I have the knowledge and they're willing to listen and do the work, everybody wins. And that's what
true.
I've been saying to people. I want everybody to win. I will never knock you for making more money than me.
Cool.
As long as you're an honest, good person about it and not being a shark, I'm with it 100%. So it's really hard now with social media and everybody getting against you because, this person's doing well and I'm not, so I'm going to hate on them for that.
That's so stupid.
It makes no sense.
Just because they make money doesn't mean you can't make money. Like, that mentality, I don't like it. Okay, so I have a bunch of questions for you.
Go. Let's do it.
So you're very niched. You talked about only working with certain companies of motorcycles, not doing American ones, and that you're a boutique service, right? At what point did you decide, I'm not here to serve everyone. I'm here to serve this part of the market only?
Well, it came with time because the time came with knowledge. So as I got more knowledgeable, I only wanted to stay with what I knew because that's where you can make mistakes easily. I mean, yes, it's great to take risks in business, but when you don't know what you're doing and you spend money to make money, that's where there's a bigger area for failure. So I just took my knowledge and kind of did a stepping stone with it. The more I knew, the more I expanded out. But for when I first started, I only did one brand of motorcycle. Oh. Now I do 6.
But were you afraid to niche yourself
every time,
pin yourself into this specific market?
Because I would say to myself, why, if I only have this one offering, how are people going to find me?
Mm-hmm.
But I got better at making my listings and information more professional. And over time, it just grew. The more I could buy, the more I could make, simply put. So I stuck to what I knew. Then in the last couple of years, the more capital I built up, I took a lot higher and harder risks on motorcycles I've never owned before, because it's night and day for some brands to take things apart and get into all the inner workings of things. So, you know, and they cost more money. So buying a Ducati is not the same as buying a Yamaha.
Mm-hmm.
Simply put, not only with cost, but how everything's designed. So took some of those big risks and it paid off like 10 times over for some of those rare situations. But it was really to satisfy certain customers. I take the people that are repeat buyers for me and I put them like you guys at Apple. I put them up here. Whatever you need, I go out of my way to find. I've even gone as far as putting my own money on the line to help a customer.
Wow.
And then get paid back afterwards with a full opportunity to lose all of it.
Wow, that's huge.
And it's worked out with a couple customers tenfold, and that's the reason that alone built the trust that they wouldn't have to ask a single question in the future about mm-hmm. money or parts. They don't even need to see stuff. And it was one of my clients in the Czech Republic who's bought probably $50,000 worth of stuff from me over the years, was that situation. You know, needed some stuff, and people wouldn't really deal with international customers. They think you're you know, a fraud or a fake. So I was basically the middleman in some situations, and it's worked out. So
that's cool. So, okay, along those lines, how do you make sure your stuff stands out online? Because you're in a sea of eBay, and there's thousands, hundreds of thousands of other listings. How do you become known?
That's one of my favorite things to talk about, because presentation in the internet is 150% of everything. Because you can sell people like, I could sell dog shit to a blind person or whatever, you know.
Well, very well put.
But the thing of it is, if you can't focus on the presentation, you're not going to stand out. So what I mean by that is the attention to detail in the pictures of your product. It could be a necklace or a car. It doesn't matter what it is. The presentation is everything. Because me as a stranger, I'm the consumer. I'm looking at your product. How do I emotionally feel when looking at it?
Mm.
Do I feel trusted by looking at it already and say, this looks quality. This has a nice background to it. This is a high-end camera. The description is well thought out and well laid out. I don't have to ask any questions after I look
There's
at this.
More than one picture of it. You could flip the picture so you can see it from the front.
Well,
the
one
back.
Picture is that you're asking for no sale at all for anything.
Yeah.
Unless it's a stock photo of a new product.
Anymore.
That's not the business
yeah.
I'm in, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And now they spin around. I mean, there's...
You can do all kinds of stuff.
Do you do videos?
Nope. So basically what's crazy is that I use my Apple devices for everything. The cameras are so great now that all my product images are taken with my iPhone. Yeah. And
is
I
that
use
the 10?
This is the 10S
okay,
Max.
Just checking.
Yeah, yeah. I always have the latest and greatest. Come
okay.
On. You
just
ask me.
Just double checking there.
So, you know, I use a white backdrop. You know, I adjust exposure, edit all the photos so that they're just good enough that they don't have a seam in the background. They look very professional. You would never know. And I take multiple angles. I'm very honest about it. If there's any damage to anything, something small, it's pictured and noted. So that if somebody gets something, it can never be item as not as described, because I stay on top of it. So that's part of it. Having the attention to detail goes into your presentation. So you'll see that. So when I sell something and people say, oh, I want to come by your shop, I say we're online only because, you know, it looks like, right? And you see hundreds of parts that I have for sale and you say, okay, where's the shop? I want to go check it out. So, I take pictures of my garage and stuff, and I have everything organized, tagged. All my inventory is laid out, you know, so I know where it is. But that's where I want to expand that into a physical location, because I know my business is 99% online. But I know if I expand it right and market it right, I could get
Someone's
the drive-by traffic.
By. Yeah.
And I don't need it.
Go
but
to
we're
a
adding...
four-car garage.
Yeah, right? I need just double my house size real quick. But that, you know, I don't need it, but I'm trying to diversify the revenue streams, adding in multiple different ways that people can come to my business and get service.
So I have a crazy question for you. Why are you choosing to take another full-time gig when you could focus on this full-time and potentially more than double your revenue?
I think it's always come down to security for me. And yes, I could survive on my motorcycle business alone. I very well could.
I would hope so in Charlotte.
Yeah. But on top of that, it's the security of adding revenue so that I can use that capital for my business. Mm. So just the security side is I get a consistent paycheck, right?
Yep.
So every 2 weeks I'm paid.
Yep.
If I'm with my motorcycle business, I can not make any money for 3 weeks, or I can make $5,000 in a day, depending on what's selling, how things are going, or whatever. Yes, you know, I'm used to it now enough, but I'm not at a point where I've said this is my line that I draw to say, okay, I'm leaving that actual job and now I can only focus on my business. I'm close, but I want to be overly secure. That's what I'm doing myself. And that's been an opportunity on my end because I should have left Apple 2 years ago.
Yep.
I
asked
complacent.
You one time, what are you doing here?
Yep. And I, you know what's scary is complacency is dangerous because you wake up and you've been at the same job for 20 years. And I say, what'd you get out of life? You sat at a desk job from 9 to 5 for 20 years. What did that do for you? I know now I need to be out and about and hustling, mm-hmm. whether it's buying a car and reselling it, buying a truck, or saying something specific with my business, whatever it is, I need to hustle it. Mm-hmm. So the car bit, this car job that I'm going to be doing, running operations at Eurowise, is going to be really great for me because the owner is so open like me to ideas and endless opportunity. Whatever you think can make us money, let's do it. Let's try it. Because he has trust and faith in me, just knowing me as a person.
Yeah.
I didn't need to bring a resume to the table because he came over to my house one day and he said, can you work for me?
Yeah.
I swear to God, he looked at my garage and he said, you need to come work for me.
Wow.
I didn't say a word. We never even talked about it, but that's all it took. So I felt pretty good about that. But the fact that I feel like I'll still have so much opportunity to run around and make money, not only for him, but for myself, everybody's winning then.
Yeah.
So for now, I'm okay with it, but I think in time I'll be okay to say, you know what, I'm going solo and I'm just going to put all my energy into this and see how far I can grow it.
Diehards, I want you to post in our Sell or Die official Facebook group how long you give Jared at his new job before he decides he's ready
to go in
all in on himself. So go to the Sell or Diehard official Facebook group and make sure you post in there hashtag Jared Rubio.
Okay, now I want to throw something at you, Diehards, because everyone talks about a side hustle, but very few people can define what a side hustler does. We've talked with Jared Rubio, and I think you have by now determined his qualities. Number one, he's passionate about what he does. Number two, he is smart. Number three, he is self-confident. Number four, he is honest. And number five, he works his ass off.
So if you ever need a referral, just play that for them.
Exactly.
I
forgot to tell you, he's also organized.
Yeah.
So it's like you have this storm, and the storm is your side hustle, and you're trying to harness the power of it because it can obviously give you what you want, but you have to be determined. You have to have the desire. And you have to have the passion, or it's not gonna manifest itself into what you're hoping for. Maybe you'll make a couple $100 a week, but you ain't gonna make a few $1,000 a
week. Not to survive off of, yeah.
Exactly.
When you got bills and everything else.
Yeah. Right, it'll buy dinner for you and your,
drinks for the weekend, and that's
exactly
about it, yeah.
Which is another bad thing. But that's a whole other thing.
And that's not the business I'm in. I'm not in the business to have a couple bucks in my pocket. Long-term wealth is the goal.
Cool. So we're going to put your link to your eBay shop in the show notes. You'll give that to us.
Yep.
And just thank you for
coming. Yeah, we're grateful
over.
For you being here.
And we
thank you guys.
Interview in person, and it was freaking awesome to have you.
I really appreciate it. This is the first time for me for anything like this, and I greatly appreciate it. It's pretty awesome to talk to you guys, and
cool.
I appreciate you.
Well, I am totally impressed with how deep Jared Rubio is as a person. I mean, he talked about family. He talked about side hustle. He talked about Apple. He's grateful for everything. But this guy has his shit together, and he's working hard all the time.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, the one thing I really was curious about, I mean, there were many things, but the one thing that stuck out to me is when your side hustle is doing that well, why take another job? Like what, you know, and I understand Jared's reasoning, but I'm here to tell you that you can take that leap of faith. And if you're sitting there, sitting here right now, listening, thinking, I have this idea and I really want to do it and I'm super passionate about it and I know that I could help other people if I went and did this, you know, it might just be the time to take that leap of faith.
And understand there's an underlying emotional process at work here, and that is fear of failure. So if you have an idea and you're scared to take the leap, dude, get rid of the fear, because you'll have a regret that you didn't take the leap in 10 years. I shoulda, woulda, coulda. Go watch On the Waterfront with Marlon Brando, filmed in Hackensack, New Jersey. I could have been a contender. I think that you need to look at what a side hustle is, and I didn't. First of all, I didn't even know what a side hustle was. maybe I'm old, but I didn't find out about it until a couple of years ago, and now all of a sudden it's like the biggest subject on the planet. What's your side hustle? You know, do you want to call it Gabrielle's side hustle? She goes to school every day and comes home and wants to sell slime. But I think that you have to look at it from the perspective of, it's not a side hustle. It's a kind of a goal. Like, I want to transition from where I am to where I want to be, but you need to do it with some kind of direct plan so that there's a time when you can take the leap. When can you take the leap?
Yeah. So actually, I talk a lot about this in Cashflow to CEO, my membership program. I talk about streamlined selling so that you can make the right sales. I talk about self-confidence, because that's one of the biggest things right now that may be holding you back. Mm-hmm. And I talk about how to do and sell, because what happens is we get into this, routine where, you know, we either are trying to become that entrepreneur and we're trying to sell all the time, but then we also have to do and provide the work. And so I break all these concepts down of how to do it and how to take that leap of faith in my membership program.
I think you also have to look at what, you know, you're going to tell your idea to other people and they're going to give you feedback, positive or negative. And you may take that feedback as something that would deter you from doing this. And I think you should, I would challenge you to go take the failure than to not do it.
And Jeffrey, we just got done filming your five greatest sales video program that will be premiering sometime spring, summer. More information on that coming up soon. But this topic sparked a memory of one of those stories that you had, your beanbag company.
Yeah.
I mean, you took a leap of faith. You started,
that's
you became
true.
A manufacturer. Like, that was, that was huge. Talk about that for a second.
I bought two bean bags just out of the truck in the late 60s. And they were coming into a furniture store. We're at the beach and needed furniture for our TV room. And these things came out and they were like the coolest thing ever. These big furry bean bags. They were $150 a piece, and I bought both of them. And I invited all my friends over, and we inhaled a little. And all these guys are sitting in the beanbag going, this is the greatest thing. I said, well, how many do you want? The business was already in my head.
You had your aha moment.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. Totally. And the guy said, one of my buddies said, well, I'll take a couple. I said, they're $150 a piece, knowing in my mind the furniture store doubled their price. And so I said, okay, they're $150 a piece. I'll have them to you in a couple of weeks. Then I invited more people over. I had about 25 orders.
Wow.
So I called the furniture manufacturer and wanted to buy them. And they wouldn't sell them to me because I wasn't a store. Here's the logic. I said, dude, this furniture store had two. I bought them both. Now I'll buy 100. Don't worry if I'm a furniture store or not. Just bring me 100 beanbags, you jackass. And he wouldn't do it.
Oh.
And I told him to go fuck himself, and I make them myself, and I did.
All right, so let's leave it
all
there, because
right.
I want to tease it, because we don't want to give away the whole thing.
That's
coming
true.
Up in the five greatest sales that Jeffrey Gittimer has ever made. It's a video program that we're going to release this summer. But how did you... So, you know, what did it take to make that leap into manufacturing? Because that's a huge deal.
Yes and no. My dad was a manufacturer, so I always had the confidence that I could go do this on my own, because I had been working in a manufacturing factory literally since I was 10 years old. And, you know, I knew how it worked and I knew what to do intuitively, and some of the things I did myself. So I wasn't scared, but and I knew I had a good idea, so I just pushed forward. If somebody would have told me not to do it, I would have said, right, yeah, you go back to your job. I'm going to do what I want to do. Thank you. Bye. And if you have an idea and you love the idea and someone tries to deter you from that idea, don't listen to those people.
Yeah.
When I was in early sales, we referred to people that would tell you no as Martians. And you had to avoid the Martians in order to be able to get where you wanted to get.
I love it.
It's totally cool.
That makes it fun.
Oh, totally.
I love it. All right. So coming up, we have the best of. And then on Monday, be back here. Well, come join us on Facebook Live for a live version of Motivation Monday. Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I'm reminding you to get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off.
Love the show? Make sure you've subscribed.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes or give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend about the best sales podcast on the planet. Or better yet, tell both your friends.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true sell or diehard, and we thank you.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit sellordienetwork.com.